Amazing Grace. I love that tune. I can hear it over and over and over again. Many singers have sung it. Gospel, jazz, folk. Played it slow, played it fast, in a choir, in a crowd, or just solo. It is sung in memorials and celebrations and in prayer. Now, I won't go into the history of the song, as I think we've had that service before, but one day, several years ago, I sort of had a vision. I call it a vision because it was in my head. That tune was kind of stuck in my head, and I started hearing it over and over and over again, and I started singing it over and over and over. I just loved it. And as my mind sometimes does, I go to, this would be a great church service. You know, being on the worship committee for many years. I thought maybe if we played that song over and over and over again, different ways and different voices, and then, we'll get some people to come up and talk about how they were lost and then found, or blind and then could see, something that changed their life or the way they see the world. And being brought up a UU, the words Lord or God in the verse song were not that important to me, as it seems to most everybody else, but grace maybe being the touch of God, or maybe grace could be many different things for different people. Maybe it was a book, an event, an inspirational person, a movie or TV show, a political movement, something from nature, a relationship, something tragic, or something wonderful, a death of a loved one, a religious experience, or maybe a church service. What was it for you? Have you had grace touch you and changed you forever? Today, we have three church members who will impart a personal story that changed their life.
As your program says, it's a poem by Carol Henry. I'm not Carol Henry. She's home preparing a large family gathering for her father's 91st birthday today. So I will try my best to read the poem that she taught me last night. The poem is entitled, A Coyote Runs Across My Path at Midnight in the Pine Loop Campground at Grand Canyon. If you drink your tea by the light, gnats and mosquitoes dive in and drown. But if you drink in the dark, you might swallow something you failed to see. We cook in this night, autumn humming nearer, ants and opalescent beetles gathering stores fallen from our meal. Summer, and we summer people use everything, the very air. Water sleeps in the rocks here, and the taps trickle over soapy plates and forks we pack away. We cook with melted ice from the cooler. All day we watched the hawks and ravens give themselves like children to the arms of air. I touched my daughter's hair. It hurt my throat to see the miles of space between that soaring and its shadow. Something wakes me, singing at a distant fire. Cold pressed against my back through cotton duck and down, sharp as teeth and unexpected as the kitten's needle bite. Deep in the rock, a shelf of ice splintering me from sleep, as if a storm had torn the night and fell in. The tent, a dome over a sullen desert and its drab sky. My foot on the path, the city of sleeping campers in their blue tents, red tents, like a field of tulips. Stars, stars, point of view. I can feel light on my shoulders, like a shawl civilizing my hair. When the first coyote lopes across my path in the circle of light, smiling over her shoulder, wouldn't I be an enlightened woman if I were star-blessed every night? The second coyote saunters by and does not notice me at all.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost and now am found, was blind and now can see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. It really has always bugged me to hear, after some terrible event, people say that it was meant to be, or that there must have been a reason, or that God had a purpose for this awful thing. So I want to be completely clear that that is not what I'm talking about today. What I am talking about is what we do with what we have experienced, how we go on. I believe that sometimes even the most negative experience can set us on a new and different path. It's happening to me. My son Christopher died 2.5 years ago, the worst day in my life. I was taking care of our other son Brandon's son Henry when I got the phone call from Texas that I had dreaded for years. Henry and I were at a coffee shop near his house that had a toddler play area. After the call, I bundled him into the stroller and pushed him home and put him to bed for a nap, calling Doug on the way with the terrible news, but remaining calm and doing what I needed to do for Henry. This was, I now realize, kind of a template for what this experience would teach me. I spent the next several months grieving this huge loss and reviewing what I had done and not done over the years regarding Christopher's alcoholism. I had spent huge amounts of money, energy, emotion, and time trying to defeat his addiction, to help him have the life I had envisioned for him, to save his life, in fact. Time passed. I thought I was coming to terms with all that pretty well. After all, I wasn't thinking too much about him and his death anymore. But last fall, I found myself feeling a little depressed, a little anxious, and a little more as time went on. I found a therapist who helped me with these feelings, meanwhile reminding me that the death of a child is not something I'm going to get over, ever. In fact, I've been avoiding and pushing away my feelings for a while, scared of them. I could understand why my child's death would lead to depression. That seemed logical, but I didn't understand the anxiety, the fear of what might happen in the future, until more recently. What seems to be true is that Christopher's death taught me that anything can happen, even the most feared thing, and that I might have zero power to prevent it. In other words, sometimes, no matter what I do, no matter how smart, how thorough, how sensible, how right I am, there are things I cannot influence or control or prevent. I really fought against this emotionally and became anxious about all sorts of things, especially that other people who were dear to me would die. My therapy was very helpful in alleviating the depression and the anxiety. And one of the constants in the exercises and techniques I learned was a focus on the here and now through meditation and deep breathing. Not a new lesson, but one I finally listened to. Now I realize that instead of focusing on the past and what I wasn't able to do and being depressed about it, or the future and trying to control situations out of my control and being anxious about them, I can focus on this tiny moment that I and we have right now. And the breath of life, if you will, the actual breath. Because the only thing I'm sure I have is this moment when I'm breathing in and breathing out. What else can I do in this tiny moment? And how can I kind of expand it a little? I can appreciate the pluses in my life. I can feel love. I can feel compassion. I can feel gratitude. Just doing that, taking a few moments during the day to focus this way on breathing, centers me and gives me peace. I thought I had power, but found that I had none or very little. That my belief that I could change my son's life, save his life, was an illusion. So if this is grace, it's tough. It taught my heart to fear, for sure. The fear of powerlessness, of not having control. But it's teaching my heart, it's teaching me to relieve my fears also. It's teaching me to focus on the present and the many blessings of my life.
The amazing moment of grace that changed my life happened on November 15th, 1956. I was brought up in a Baptist church in Pomona, taught to believe in the God of my grandparents. Never occurred to me to question the rules or heaven and hell. One big rule was that good Christians could only be married once. For life, no divorce, no remarriage. My mother was divorced to the dismay of my parents. And the family went to extreme lengths to cover up what they considered a great shame. I was married at the age of 18 and a father a year and a half later. I was going to show my parents how it was to be done. I worked nights full time and I went to college in the daytime. A year later, my wife left me with no explanation and I had no idea what was going on. That wasn't how it was supposed to be. After fighting the divorce and losing, I dropped out of college, quit my job, took a motorcycle trip across the country. One cold night in late September, I was standing by the heater at a gas station in Provo, Utah. I was learning that the whole country didn't have the same weather as Southern California. The attendant told me that if I flagged down the night patrolman, he would probably put me up in the jail for the night. I found him, and he did. From then on, sleeping in small-town jails became a way of life. The lowest was being booked into the state prison in West Virginia. I met a murderer and a rapist and several other people in for various crimes. By that time, I'd lost most of my churchy pride, and I wondered if I could possibly sink any lower. After 2 months, I had spent all of the $100 that I started off with. Things were cheaper back then. I found myself in Arkansas with no money and the main bearings burned out in my motorcycle.
At that point, I just wanted to get on with my life and get back to Pomona. I went found a car dealer who had a 56 Chevy that he wanted driven to Los Angeles. He'd pay my gas plus $20. So I put the motorcycle in the trunk and drove to L.A. I've never felt so helpless or so lost in all my life, before or since. I was trying so hard to get God to help me, and since I was in the right, I couldn't see why he wouldn't. I prayed to God in the only way I'd been taught. After a while, I felt so lost that I couldn't even pray anymore. And I just told God that I couldn't think of any other way to get through to him. And if there was some, if he was interested in directing my life, if he was really there, if he was not, I would just trust that he would find a way to get through to me. I wouldn't make any preconditions of what that might be. I would just take it as it comes. I felt a sudden sense of peace come over me. The grace of God, if you will. I experienced a personal connection to God beyond the stuff that I'd been taught in church. Thus began the sense of my personal, portable God that I could trust to direct my path. I lost my fear of living. Life became a classroom with every experience, whether good or bad, just another lesson to be learned in my life. I began to read the Bible over and over again. I didn't rebel against my church. I only went deeper into the Bible and wondered at some of the themes I found there. Love your enemies and killing them in peace or in war didn't seem to make much sense. I also discovered that Jesus taught his followers to communicate directly with God, not to be told what to believe by ministers or priests. I went to jail for leaving the army, but jail was no longer a place of shame. Years later, I remarried, but the sky didn't fall in. Over the years, God has taken on many different forms for me, sometimes very personal, and sometimes just a force that seems to run everything. Life and death have held little fear for me. Sometimes I thought there's a heaven. Other times, reincarnation seems like a sensible idea. Mostly, it doesn't matter. And someday I may find out, or not. It's a little embarrassing now to look back to a time when I thought that the God of the universe cared enough about my particular life to be a direct part of it. I still retain a mystical connection to something, but I don't often call it God. I only know that the moment of grace and the freedom that it gave me to live my own life through many impossible, improbable experiences was the birth of my life as I now know it. Some call it being born again. It kind of felt that way. Even now, it truly seems to have been the new beginning of life for me. Whatever it was, whoever it was, no matter how my interpretations may change over time, that moment of amazing grace will never be forgotten.
I'm Renee Ray. Hopefully I won't lose my voice here. I was asked to do a speech today and about a moment that changed my life. And I haven't had huge, momentous moments in my life, but I've had lots of little ones. And this last 3 weeks, I've been sick, and sicker than I've ever been in my life, kind of scary sick, actually, because I usually don't get sick. And so it gave me a lot of time to think. It was either that or watch 80 episodes of Desperate Housewives with my eyes sometimes closed because it hurt too much to open them. But it gave me a lot of time to think about what I was going to talk today, and I wrote one thing after another, and I couldn't come to something. And finally, you know, it dawned on me, something that happened to me just last year, and it's continuing, and this is one of my little graces in my life. So some of you have probably heard this story. but I think it bears repeating. So recently, we bought a farm, and so my dream come true of growing lots of organic produce and selling it and teaching people about, you know, being more in balance with the earth, it was coming true. So last year, I was drowning in squash, and it got to the point where people saw me coming, and they said, no more. So the Green Sanctuary had mentioned the Urban Orchards Program through the South Hayward Parish's food pantry, and they'll come glean the fruits and vegetables from your own property, and or you could deliver it to them. So this fresh local produce, along with the other canned food collections, really helps feed the needy. So this sounds great. So I decided to drop off my patty pan squash. When I got there, I saw two elderly ladies in the parking lot. They were comparing their bags of groceries and looking at each other's groceries. I walked around the corner to find a long line of people patiently sitting there waiting for their groceries. A volunteer there took one look at my squash and said, oh, those are different. They look like flying saucers. So we both laughed, and he proceeded to take the squash. I noticed their shelves didn't have much in the way of canned goods. I also found out that in 1996, the South Hayward Parish Food Pantry used to serve 35,000 people a year, and now they serve 250,000 people a year. That's 700% more in the last 16 years. I was so moved by this whole experience and vowed to donate our fresh produce regularly. So as I drove away, I thought about our eggs that we're selling. I turned right back around in my car and went back and said, could you use eggs? Absolutely, they said. The protein sources were always low at the food pantry, and the elderly especially needed it. I mentioned this to our Egg CSA customers. Those are the people who buy shares of our eggs, and we provide eggs for them every week. I said if they couldn't pick up their eggs on that particular week, we'd be happy to donate their share to the Urban Orchards program. Their response was so positive. They were happy to have this option, knowing that it was going to a good cause. In fact, some people have actually paid a little extra so that I will donate a little extra eggs each week to the pantry. So every Tuesday, I take my eggs and I take our produce and I donate it to the food pantry. So I've since been to the pantry many times to donate produce and eggs. Sometimes I see family with children, or I see the elderly, or I see young couples that are just having some tough times. So as a Green Sanctuary member, I made it a mission to advertise the Urban Orchards program to our Star King members. So I'm happy to say that along with all of our Star King members and ourselves, our farm, we've donated hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pounds of produce, possibly even close to 1,000 pounds. Also, as of today, our Egg CS members from our Star King Church have donated over 100 dozen eggs since September of 2011. I can't tell you, it gives me goosebumps just saying it. It makes me feel so good about the generosity of this congregation. So in closing, I just want to say that this has been a big thing for me, and it's meant a lot to me, and it brings such personal satisfaction just feeling that, you know, harvesting my produce, packing it up, and taking it to the food pantry. In my crazy schedule, I feel like I found one little thing that I can do to help others, and it's a very, very good feeling.
Now, as Bob extinguishes the flame, the blessing. Go in peace. Live simply and gently at home in yourself. Act justly. Speak justly. Remember the depth of your own compassion. Forget not your power in the days of your powerlessness. Do not desire to be wealthier than your peers, and stint not your hand of charity. Practice forbearance. Speak truth, or speak not. Take care of yourselves as bodies, for you are a good gift. Crave peace for all people in the world, beginning with yourselves, and go as you go with the dream of that peace alive in your heart. Amen. Blessed be.